What the hell was that?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah, yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this kook. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
And hornfm.com.
Is there a problem back there?
Where the Longhorns play and Austin talks sports.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Monday, Funday edition of the Rodcast. Specs text line, 512-337-3776. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. My man Wags is at Not the Fake Wags. We got to get to this Maryland scandal. We'll also talk more about the fake news that involved Tom Herman over the weekend. We'll go behind the burnt orange curtain, talk about some of the notes from the scrimmage over the weekend and some of the unfortunate news. More injuries for the Longhorns as well. We'll dive deep into that, and we go behind the burnt orange curtain just a little bit later on this segment. The Reliable Automotive Top 20 for the Horn is at number 15 today. It's number 15, Stanford. All right, the Stanford Cardinal. We'll get into that coming up in the second segment. We'll start off the second segment, as a matter of fact, getting into the Horn Top 20, the Reliable Automotive Horn Top 20. Also, there's some NFL stories I want to get into. There's one – oh, man, and I called this last week. Matter of fact, I called it like 2 weeks ago. It's the reason they called me Black Stradamus. I told you how the Cowboys are going to start using Ezekiel Elliott. And I said, Ezekiel Elliott – now, I remember the exact words – I say Ezekiel Elliott needs to be used in the same manner, and he needs to be weaponized in the same manner as Todd Gurley. He's just as good receiving out of the backfield as Todd Gurley. They need to, the Cowboys need to shift their focus a little bit in the passing game and try to give him his fair share in the passing game. Line him up in different spots. Also, that would help his longevity. That would help his shelf life. You know, it's for him, that's less wear and tear on his body to use him in that way, actually in the passing game. So, turns out there's a story today, Pro Football Talk is where I saw it, that says the Cowboys, they're thinking about actually shifting their focus. They got Ezekiel Elliott watching Marshall Faulk, watching Marshall Faulk film, who's one of the greatest dual threat running backs in the history of the NFL. Zeke is that guy, he can do it. And that's another – right now, if you're the Cowboys, you just got to add on layers to the offense. You need layers. It's right now, it doesn't have a lot of layers to it, all right? So you need Dak's ability to run. You need the offensive line, and you need the dominant running game. But how about Zeke in the passing game? That's another layer now you can add to the offense. Tavon Austin, his multiplicity, another layer you can add to the offense. And, yeah, these different layers may only count for 7 to 8% of your offensive snaps, but it adds up. You know what I mean? Those snaps, they add up over time. So, and trust me, the way the Giants are going to use Saquon Barkley, they're going to use him like that too. He's going to be everywhere. They're going to line him up in the backfield. They're going to line him up in the slide. They're going to motion him out. If they're smart, they're going to utilize him much in the same manner that Todd Gurley's utilized right now. Or Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell's probably a better example. But I was just looking at the numbers because Todd Gurley wasn't utilized like that under Jeff Fisher because Jeff Fisher is – One of the greatest
NFL minds we've ever known.
No, he's one of the greatest frauds ever perpetuated on the American public is what he is. But, you know, I mean, it's good for him. He was able to fool people. He's great.
I might give him the best mustache, maybe.
The porn stash, maybe that's what carried him. But he was never a great head coach. But when Todd Gurley was under him, he wasn't utilizing the passing game. You bring in Sean McVay, and now Todd Gurley is Le'Veon Bell all of a sudden. So I think the Cowboys can do that too, and now there's a report to suggest it. So we'll talk a little Cowboys coming up a little bit later on in the show as well. We got crosstalk coming up too. But right now, let's start with, you know, we'll start with the Maryland story, and actually the Maryland story relates to Texas because Texas starts the season right against Maryland, and then we'll make our way behind the burnt orange curtain. But we got to sort through this Maryland story really quickly because, man, there's a lot of misinformation out there. So DJ Durkin, head coach at Maryland, he was suspended indefinitely after an ESPN report broke about the handling or mishandling, maybe, of the death of one of their players. Jordan McNair was a Maryland offensive lineman who, during one of their offseason drills in late May, collapsed and had a seizure And he died 2 weeks later, and the cause of death, I believe, was attributed to heat stroke. Now, it was only 80 to 85 degrees out there, but he was off his alignment, and maybe he was out of shape. Maybe they were running him too hard. Right now, nobody knows exactly, but there's a lot of questions. So he collapsed and had a seizure around 5 p.m.
Heat index was probably around like 100, man. I'm speculating,
really?
But being from there, being in swampland,
it's humid.
Stuff,
yeah,
it's humid.
But it ain't Texas, okay? It ain't H-Town where it is 95 and it feels like 155. Like it's
almost to that level though. I'm not even gonna lie.
No, not really. You can't say that.
It's the heat index. If you walk outside, you don't need two
shirts.
No,
I know it's
hot.
I'm not
saying
it's not.
You can get away with one shirt.
But I'm saying 80 and 95 plus humidity. Houston is one of the most humid spots on the planet.
Yeah, no doubt.
So it's
humid there too. But it is along the coastline as well.
And I know. Exactly. So I grew up in Houston. So I'm telling you, I used to work out in this weather in the heat. I feel you. So I'm saying it's hot, but it's not to the point where they should be working out inside. It's like, oh, in Houston, sometimes it's so hot. It's like, no. No human being, no creature should be outside running in this heat. Get inside. So there was no reason for them to initially go, whoa, we should be working out inside today because it is way too damn hot. In Texas, that happens literally all the time. It's like, nah, man, it's too damn hot. We got to go inside. All right, we got to work out before 10 a.m. It's going to get to 90. It's going to get to 98 at 11. We got to make sure all of our workouts are done by then. Like they didn't have to worry about that because it was 80. But as my man Wax said, it's humid as hell. All right, so we all know that feels like 90-something, especially he's an offensive lineman. So he collapses at 5, has a seizure, and then at 5:58, I believe a 911 call is made. And the EMS, the EMT responders, they come in. They don't like what they're seeing when they come in. That's when they call ahead to a hospital, and they have him, I believe, airlifted out. And he's taken to a hospital, taken to several different hospitals, actually, in his 2 weeks before he passed away. So the big question mark is, the number one question is, what happened in the 58 minutes? What happened in the 58 minutes? That's the number one question. It's 58 minutes, supposedly, between him collapsing, having a seizure, and them actually calling 911, 58 minutes. Man, what kind of shape was he in? And did you guys really believe that you were up to the task of him being in that type of serious health condition? And now we're getting reports from the players, all right? And the strength and conditioning coach has been suspended, as well as some of his assistants. And, of course, DJ Durkin, the head coach, been suspended. But there are reports now from the players, because now there are follow-up reports about the culture of Maryland football, which may have led up to this young man's collapse and later on his death. That there's been a lot of irresponsible strength and conditioning policies, and their culture has been very toxic, and that may have led to this. Because they had kind of set a bad precedent, and there's a bad culture going on, and it could have led to that. So now that's the second question. Not only what happened in the 58 minutes between him collapsing, having a seizure, and then you guys calling 911, but what happened before that? What happened on the field during the workout? The workout started around, they said it started around 4:15, I believe. He said the workout started. And so in that 45 minutes, there are a lot of players that are saying, he obviously at one point had to be dragged across the last sprint with two trainers, one under each arm. And there are players saying he did not have control of his physical faculties, like he didn't have control of his head. And he was that after the workout was over, he did finish the workout, by the way. After the workout was over, they tried to walk him around. Instead of dumping him in a cold pool with ice, they walked him around to try to revive him. He was up, but he was just kind of walking around like a zombie, is what the players described him as. And he said they walked him around for a while. So, yeah, 4:15 is when the workout started. So in that 45 minutes now, people are going to want to know what happened in that 45 minutes, like during the workout, and getting the players' side to it, too. So here's one of the players. He says, one of the players says, there's no way he finished that workout on his own. There were multiple people that said, wow, Jordan looks effed up. He doesn't look right. We knew he was really exhausted, but we didn't know he was in danger of his life. But that doesn't mean that a medical professional shouldn't know to put him in an ice tub. That's what a player said. Second player said Jordan was obviously not in control of his body. He was flopping around. There were two trainers on either side of him bearing a lot of weight. They interlocked their legs with his in order to keep him standing up. They tried to walk him around for a while after he collapsed. His head, he barely had control over it. His head was limp to the point where it was back. They were walking around him across the field, get him up and moving, I guess. But then they basically took him over to position drills, which took a long time. I didn't see them bring him in, but it was a wow. So a lot of the players are saying there are symptoms of, you know, during the workout that, dude, this dude, y'all need to take this dude out. Y'all need to go take him back to the trainer's room and, you know, attend to him because he doesn't need to be pushed. Now, we all know it's a thin line. Listen, I ran the 1,000-yard shuttles with weight vests on out there in the heat with Bad Dog. And after we lost, we had to crawl before we walk and do 10 up-downs every 10 yards saying, I love Texas, and saying that the pride and winning tradition of Texas football would not be entrusted a week or to 10 minutes. I remember it. And there is a part of that mental toughness where you're pushing someone to be mentally tough. My man Wax knows about this very much as well, all right? There is kind of that mentality where, hey, we cannot let weakness infiltrate this program. And there is a weeding out. And they talk about it that they were trying to weed players out of the program. But there's a difference between that and then humiliating players. And now there's a report that they would abuse these players in trying to weed them out in terms of verbal abuse. And they would humiliate the players in front of everybody. There's a staffer, one former Maryland staffer says, I would never, ever allow my child to be coached there. Apparently, this strength coach, Rick Court, was one of the most hated people on the team. A second former staffer said that while he has seen and heard coaches curse at players, he'd never been on another coaching staff with this kind of philosophy. The language is profane. It's demeaning at times when you're characterizing people in such derogatory, demeaning terms, particularly if they don't have a skill level you think they need to aspire to, or they may never get then. Then it's rough to watch and see because it was your son. You wouldn't want anybody talking to your son that way. So now there are, and apparently right after McNair's incident where the young man collapses and has a seizure, they have a team meeting. Maryland coaches said they allowed the players to criticize, and the players really spoke their mind, and they said they would try to do their best to kind of lessen the intensity of the workouts, because apparently this was an issue. The players have been complaining about how intense the workout was, how toxic and intense the environment was, and I wasn't there, so I don't know, but the players are complaining about it. And the players complained enough where the coaches listened, and apparently they lessened a lot of the intensity. But once training camp started again, then all bets were off, and apparently a lot of the players are saying it was right back at the same toxic culture that they had to deal with. So now DJ Durkin is suspended, and there's one player that said DJ Durkin personally got in his face and badmouthed him and, you know, cussed him out, and before he ended up transferring. And they've had a ton of guys transfer, too. They've had 20 players who have left in the past 2.5 years. That doesn't mean a lot. There's always a lot of turnover. And DJ Durkin has gone through – his staff has gone through significant change. Only 4 of the original assistants from the 2016 staff remain on that staff. A lot of those staff members – left because they didn't like the culture. They said they were trying to weed out the players that they didn't like. They actually called some players thieves for being on scholarship and not being very good. During some of the workouts, there were kids who really were struggling, and Coach Court, that strength and conditioning coach, he'd keep on yelling. He would use profanity a lot and try to push kids out of the program, push them past their limits. If a kid would stop or go on the ground, him and the medical staff would try to drag players up and get them to run after they had already reached their limit. They definitely bullied us to make sure we kept going. So, and they're saying that Durkin knew everything that was going on. Current and former players also described several instances where staff members targeted players because of weight issues. They would force players to eat candy bars as a form of humiliation in front of the team because they want that guy to gain weight. One player said they were trying to make me gain weight really fast. He said that involved me overeating sometimes until I threw up. They always had me come back for extra meals. Once I was sitting down eating with a coach, and he basically made me sit there until I threw up. He said to eat until I threw up. I was doing what they asked me to do, trying to gain weight, but at the time, I just couldn't gain the weight, and I guess they weren't understanding that. That I got to tell you, listen, I know the line, all right? Mad Dog Madden showed us the line, all right? Physical toughness and mental toughness are a big part of that. They are crossing the line. You're getting into humiliation. That's not making me better. You're getting into, you know, man, guys eat till they throw up. Come on, man. Like, really? Is that part of the culture that you want to build in terms of building young men? Yeah, they're crossing the line. If DJ Durkin knew about it and did nothing about it, then, yeah, DJ Durkin's going to probably have to answer for that. And people are saying, well, that's the wussification and the softening of America and football. Yeah. If you want to put it that way, but you wouldn't want your son being forced to eat till they throw up.
Yeah, that's the question right there.
Right. You wouldn't want your son having to eat candy bars in front of the team, humiliating him. You wouldn't want that.
Yeah, dude, I've been trained, you know what I mean? Right, in hashtags and quints, you know, quotations or whatever, air quotes. But look, man, this is just beyond the line, dude. There's one. Now you've lost the trust in that player.
In the team. Because
the team saw it.
The team saw it. That's how you're going to treat them, then you're going to treat me like that.
And you've created the atmosphere. I don't care if you're trying to make everybody hate you so that the players get, you know, I guess, along better or whatever. If you're trying to find, you know,
you're trying to get that me against the world mentality where there's camaraderie built from it.
It's the wrong message.
You got to find a different way. It just doesn't work. Trust me. Ask Mike Leach, who got fired probably for less. Not probably for less. It was for less. You know what I mean? It happens. Like, you can't. There's a different mentality now. And do we have this Will Muschamp sound? Speaking of the mentality. So, and a young man died, by the way. We often forget the victims in these stories because they become so salacious and we look at all the domino effect and the butterfly effect. A young man did die. So, when a young man dies, yeah, it's time to review our message, our mission statement, what we do. Because somebody died as a result of it. That's not cool. A young man died as a result. Yeah. Here is Will Muschamp, who once was the head coach at Florida, and DJ Durkin was his DC. Here's him, on his staff, I should say. He is him talking about that scandal and the Maryland scandal, his indefinite suspension.
I know DJ Durkin. He worked for me for 4 years at the University of Florida. He is an outstanding football coach, but he's also an outstanding husband and a father, and he treats people with respect. And I will use your word, alleged article. There's no credibility in anonymous sources. You know, if that former staffer had any guts, why didn't he put his name on that? I think that's gutless. And in any business, and in any company, and in any football team, especially right here in August, you can find a disgruntled player that's probably not playing. So I think it's a lack of journalistic integrity to print things with anonymous sources. And I know DJ Durkin personally, and I know what kind of man he is. I know what kind of person he is. I talked to him this morning, and I don't think he's right. So, next question.
He's right. There are guys who are displeased on every team, upset with the situation. He's wrong about the anonymous sources thing. I mean, we need anonymous sources. Think about how many government scandals would have gone unreported if not for anonymous sources.
No, that's just the way it's supposed to be.
Thank God for anonymous sources. But he is right. There are a lot of guys who are disgruntled everywhere around the country. It's why guys transfer. It's why they leave. But if any of these reports are true about the humiliation and what my man Wax, I think, put it even more eloquently, it's basically hazing. Like, why are you hazing your players? And that's something that was removed from sports, or at least has been banished from sports some time ago. Maybe 5-6 years ago, we decided, you know what, hazing, that's not cool either. You know, we don't want to do that. And they actually put in different NCAA rules, and now there are NFL rules against hazing players because we decided that's uncivilized. Guys get hurt because of it. That's not cool. And it's unnecessary. We don't even care about it. Doesn't matter to us. Doesn't hurt or help our entertainment, objective, which is to put out the best product available. So, yeah, I think – I don't know if DJ Durkin's going to lose his job as a result of this. But now we're deciding to have the conversation whether DJ Durkin is a bad guy. How much of this did he know about? That's why Will Muschamp is out there saying, no, he's a good husband. He's a good father. He's a good family man. Because he's just, is he just an a-hole, you know, an a-hole coach, or is he a bad guy? You know what I mean? Because I want my coach to be an a-hole. I'm not going to lie. The best coaches are. You know what I mean? The Bill Belichicks, the Greg Popovich, the Bill Parcells, Vince Lombardi. They're all pretty much a-holes. That doesn't make them bad people. They're not bad guys. You know what I mean? As a result of that. And, you know, there are now some people you can, Rick Pitino is considered a bad guy. An a-hole and a bad guy. People will say, oh, Tom Herman, if that story were true about Tom Herman, helping out or at least, him, being the source for Brett McMurphy's story, which turns out that was not the case, even though that had been blown up by Jeff Snook, that he was the reported source for Brett McMurphy's story. He refuted that as well as Brett McMurphy himself. But even if it were true, and people were saying, ah, see, that makes Tom Herman, you know, it makes him kind of an a-hole. He's diabolical. He's trying to take down Urban Meyer over a, you know, recruiting battle or some recruiting competition for that he lost out on. Yeah, that'd make him an a-hole, but I don't know if it'd make him a bad person. You could argue it'd make him a good person because he was helping out expose, you know, a scandal and Urban Meyer covering up for a domestic abuser, and his wife and him may have been helping out financially the victim of that domestic abuse, Courtney Smith, because they were, that was a family friend of theirs, all that stuff that. Actually, they were helping out Courtney Smith, but that's the only part of that story that was true. They were helping her out while they were there at Ohio State. That, to me, wouldn't have made him a bad person. Like I said, you could argue that made him a good person, that he actually did have some integrity about the situation. But even if you said he did it for the wrong reasons and that his motive may have been distorted, to me, that doesn't make him a bad guy. We're trying to figure out right now whether Urban Meyer is a bad guy, whether he is trying to cover up a serial domestic abuser, and whether he's trying to prioritize football over victims and over human lives. Art Browse and Joe Paterno now are eternally bad people. Like, we don't like them. We don't want them around. We don't want them now in the public stratosphere. Art Browse had to go over to coach in Italy, and everybody was like, I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. Yeah, that actually, I don't want him coaching anywhere in the north, the Northern America, right? Well, anywhere, maybe he can go to Central America or South America. Maybe. I think if he tries to go to South America, that they would still get on. They don't want him anywhere in the Americas.
Hemisphere, man.
They don't, exactly. They sent him all the way over to Italy. They don't even want him in the Americas, okay? He tried to go to Canada. They were like, hell no, you ain't going to Canada. We don't want you in Canada either. And I think Joe Paterno, and I think part of the reason he died was because his heart was so broken. He understood, I'm gonna be banished like Art Browse. Like, that is now that's my legacy. And it broke his heart to the point where he just died of a broken heart. You know what I mean? Not long after the scandal broke. And we learned later, Joe Paterno knew way more than he was letting on. So he's a bad guy now. So your coach can be an a-hole. Tom Herman's mocking, you know, the Drew Locke on the sidelines of the Texas Bowl. Yeah, you can say, oh, man, that guy's an a-hole for that. Okay, he's our a-hole. I'm cool with that. Because Nick Saban's an a-hole. Bill Belichick is, too, and so is Greg Popovich. Doesn't make them bad people. DJ Durkin now, we're deciding whether he's a bad guy.
Everybody forgetting that Nick Saban's stepped over some dude having a seizure?
Nick Saban did do that. Yeah, and that may make him a bad guy, too, actually. You did, one of your players was having a seizure, and you walk over him and you go to your office. That may make you a bad guy. You know what I mean? But, yeah, I don't want my coach to be a bad guy, but I don't mind him being an a-hole. I don't mind it at all. So that's, people are like, oh, it's Tom Herman. He's kind of shady. I'm like, no, he's not. Actually, that shows me that he is he's that diabolical that he figures he's going to take down Urban Meyer at Ohio State. Not because he wants the job, because it's competition. And, hey, you know what? If certain rules apply and, you know, if I have to do something duplicitous behind the scenes to take down a rival in terms of recruiting and a rival in terms of my future status as, you know, the head coach at Texas, then I'll do it. To me, it was like, hey, maybe that's how cutthroat it is. Maybe he's just one of those. Maybe it's that cutthroat behind the scenes that Tom Herman's like, I'm not gonna win at all costs. All right, I'm gonna be a great role model. But hey, all's fair in love and war. Turns out none of that story was true. I think we wanted it to be true. We really did. We wanted it to be true so badly, but it ain't. Right now, we have no evidence of it. It's a great conspiracy theory to throw out there and talk about, but there's no evidence right now that Tom Herman had anything to do with that Brett McMurphy report because it was refuted by all sources involved. So it doesn't even really have the great salacious factor of a good conspiracy theory because so many people have gone on the record to say that it's not true. But we want it to be true. It's like LeBron James having an affair with Beyonce. We want it to be true. Or the Donald Trump tape for Russia. We really do. We want it to be true. But right now, there's no evidence to support it. All right, we'll come back. We'll go Reliable Automotive Horn Top 20 to start off with. Then we'll go behind the burnt orange curtain, talk about the scrimmage from this weekend, all of the news notes and nuggets, all that and more right here on the Rodcast. This is the Horn 104.9 and AM 1260.
It's the Horns College Football Top 20, brought to you by Reliable Automotive.
Love, he's got a chance. Oh, what kind of speed do you got, Bryce Love? He's got enough. Touchdown, Stanford.
Number 15, the Stanford Cardinal.
All right, welcome back to the broadcast. Time to get into our Reliable Automotive Horn at top 20, number 15, Stanford Cardinal. And I think one thing we all know about Stanford this year, they have the best running back in the country. Honestly, you can do that without even saying a lot of research. Bryce Love is a beast. Track star, he's got all of the tools
Heisman to become runner up.
5'2 running back. Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about world-class speed. Actually, he was a track star in high school coming out to Stanford. Has been clocked at around 4'3". I mean, he's legit. And he rushed for over 1,200 yards last year. But he has 13 straight games, I believe it is. Make sure I get the stat right. Yeah, 13 straight games. Sorry, 2,200 yards. He has 13 straight games where he has had at least one run of 30 yards or more. He's got 11 straight games with at least one run of at least 50 yards. As I said, over 2,200 yards last year. He's a beast. I mean, he really is. Like, he is one of the most dynamic players in college football. He allows them, and that offensive line, by the way, will allow them to control the game and control the line of scrimmage and control the ball. So I know people are concerned about the defense because they only return, I think, 6 starters on defense, so people are freaking out. But the offensive line, the running game, is probably the best possible scenario for an inexperienced defense because they can just keep the defense on the sideline and control the game. They got 4 starters returning on the offensive line, but 7 guys in the rotation that have starting experience. So they're going to have 7 guys with starting experience on the offensive line, but 4 of the starters from last year will return.
You just got fresh offensive linemen with experience. Just keep rotating.
Just keep rotating them.
That's a machine, man.
That's a machine. And you know they got a tight end. As a matter of fact, they do. Yep, here it is. Their tight end, Kobe Parkinson, a sophomore, is 6'7". You know they got tight ends that they I don't know where the hell they grow them out there at Stanford, but they do. And they have a returning quarterback who got some starting experience last year in KJ Costello, but he's got to be a game manager. With Bryce Love, just manage the game. The play action will be wide open because everybody's going to put 8 in the box to stop Bryce Love. And when they do that, man, you can just go over the top play action to your 6'7 tight end or deep down the field. So here is real quick. We do have Lee Sterling. We got a couple of takes here on Stanford. Lee Sterling, who gives us a take from the Vegas Wise Guys. Here's what he has to say about Stanford this season.
Well, CJ Costello is a returning starter, and that's so important. When you get into the Pac-12, Costello had 14 touchdowns, just 4 interceptions, maybe the best running back in the country. And Bryce Love had over 2,100 yards rushing, 19 rushing touchdowns. So he's almost unstoppable. They've got some guys behind him, Scarlett, who can run. And they're returning receivers. That's where – if you look at a weakness on this team, besides the safety position, where there is some concern, a lot of guys that are possession receivers, only freshman, this kid, Brown, has that deep speed that you need to break open plays. And as you know, Pac-12 ball, a lot of high scores, you see a lot of 41-38 finals. So, besides Love, one of those guys or maybe 2 receivers need to emerge. They always have great tight ends, and they have this kid, Caden Smith, the sophomore, who is top shelf. He'll be playing in the NFL. He, as a freshman, had 23 receptions for over 400 yards, averaging 18 yards a reception and 5 touchdowns. That was as a freshman. Look out what he does his sophomore year. And another great tight end in Colby Parkinson, a sophomore. So those two guys, they run a lot of two tight end offense. Very tough to defend because you don't see it all the time. And they pound the ball, huge offensive line, everyone way above 300 pounds. So they get some wide receivers who develop, and they work on that safety position. They allowed some big plays last year, not allow as many big plays. I think this is a team that'll be right there. Only thing that worries you is playing for maybe the conference championship. They got to go to Washington November 3rd. So November 3rd, mark that down. That's when we'll probably find out who wins the Pac-12, Stanford or Washington.
Yeah, I think actually Stanford and Washington are the two premier teams in the Pac-12. There's no question about it. Washington's going to be loaded, too, and they return starting quarterback, too, in Jake Browning. We'll talk about them, I'm sure, later on the Horn Reliable Top 20, Reliable Automotive Top Horn Top 20. But getting back to something that he brought up about the offensive line of Stanford, I mean, if you – talk about how dominant an offensive line can be. I mean, they are mammoth, but they usually come out in a double tight too. Like they like to play two tight ends. And I brought up one, Colby Parkinson, but they have Kane Smith as their other tight end, who's also a sophomore. He's 6'5". That's what makes them even more imposing. That's what makes their play action so effective. So I really do think that offense is going to be one of the best in the country. I think defensively they can hide the liabilities they have on defense because the running game and the offense is going to be clicking on all cylinders. They got a returning starter at quarterback. You got a dynamic runner. I think the only concern, and I haven't brought up David Shaw, but I think David Shaw is probably one of the best coaches in college football. He's always getting – you know, these reports are he's always getting interest from the NFL. I think, you know, if you look at his resume, you can stack it up against anybody other than Nick Saban and Urban Meyer. He's right there in the conversation. You could argue for him being a top five coach in college football. I mean, he's really been that impressive the time that he's been there after replacing Jim Harbaugh.
This is his only head coaching job too, right?
Yeah. I mean, but he's got an NFL pedigree. His dad coached in the NFL for a long time. I would take him as my – honestly, when Charlie Strong was being recorded as the new head coach at Texas, I was one of the people that said, man, did they go after David Shaw? Did they ask him about it? He doesn't want to leave Stanford, though. He's one of those guys. He said the only – time that he'll leave Stanford, maybe it's to go see NFL, and he has no NFL interest right now either. So I like him as head coach. I trust the head coach. The offense is going to be phenomenal. In the Pac-12, defense is kind of like defense in the Big 12. It's not a priority. So I think you can still win the Pac-12 without having a dominant defense, but Washington does have a great defense. Washington's defense may be a top 10 defense. It's going to be nasty. And they got a returning quarterback too. So I think there's anybody that's going to stop Stanford from potentially winning with Pac-12. It's going to be Washington. We still have John Harris. Here's John Harris and his take, and he does a lot of, from a scouting perspective about some of the talent that Stanford has. Here's John Harris talking about Stanford on B&E.
I think Stanford, being number 15, Stanford is probably, this is, I think, the most perfect fit. I don't think it's a team that really can contend for a college football playoff, but I think it's a team that does enough of the right things really well. They run the ball, their offensive line is very, very good. And I think Bryce Love is going to be the key. Costello at quarterback can do just enough, but it's a Bryce Love show. Now, if Bryce goes down, then where do you go at that point? That's going to be a question for them. They've got to have some depth. Jordan Scarlett has been that guy for a few years. They got to be able to rely on him. But to me, it's going to be the Bryce Love show. Defensively, the secondary is key. They lost Justin Reed. They also lost Quentin Meeks. So that's secondary. Have lost a lot of leaders back there. That's where they're going to have to step up. But to me, one of the sleeper NFL candidates is that linebacker, and it's Bobby Okereke, who I had not really a lot of knowledge of when I went to go watch the Oregon offense. And I watched him against Stanford, and number 20 kept popping out, an inside linebacker. He can do a lot in that defense at about 240 pounds at 6'2". He could be a sleeper inside linebacker candidate for the NFL.
All right, that's John Harris on Stanford, the number 15 team in our Reliable Automotive Horn Top 20. All right, let's go behind the burnt orange curtain quickly, talk about the scrimmage, some of the headlines from the scrimmage the Longhorns had this past weekend.
And they were all asking themselves the same question. What is behind that curtain?
Okay, so Tom Herman spoke to the media this weekend after the scrimmage. Here are his thoughts, the head coach's thoughts on who won the scrimmage from this weekend.
The defense. Yeah, they had a couple turnovers early, and we started the scrimmage with the ball in the minus two, so we had to work on our backed up situations, and so sometimes that's going to happen for an offense, and we got to learn how to respond.
All right, here's another audio clip before we discuss it briefly about Herman, Tom Herman, talking about his overall thoughts on the scrimmage this past weekend.
I saw the defense showed up early. The offense struggled a little bit early, but found a rhythm, especially in the red zone. So, again, happy with the fact that both sides of the ball had some success at different points. So you never want any scrimmage to be one-sided, and feel good that today wasn't.
Rod, are you surprised at all that the defense actually stood out?
Well, no. Everybody's expecting the defense to be really good, so I think that's good news for Lohan fans. The defense may be as good as expected. The bad news is there's some injuries on the defensive side of the ball from that scrimmage. Ayodele Adeoye, he apparently is dealing with an injury now. DeMarvion Overshown also sustained a knee injury. And we know the linebacking core is already thin. We talked about this with Edwin Freeman transferring this past offseason. Then you got Jeff McCulloch with a pec injury. Anthony Will is going to be suspended for the first half of the Maryland game. Most people forget that. And then you got DeMarco Boyd, who's got off-the-field concerns. So right now you're really thin at linebacker. And Gary Johnson had a stinger, but reportedly Gary Johnson's fine. He was limited in the scrimmage, but everything worked out for him. So a lot of those young linebackers, you've already been playing those guys. The thing about the culture of the Big 12 is linebacker, I think, is one of the positions where you can afford to be thin. You can't afford to be thin at defensive back or defensive line in the Big 12, because there are still a lot of teams that run the football, even though they spread you out and may have tempo added to the equation when they do that. So for Texas, Gary Johnson, now you got to put him in a glass case. And you need to put Malcolm Roach in a glass case. And essentially, I don't really need to see anything out of these guys until we start off against Maryland in less than 3 weeks. That's what he's got to do, because right now linebackers are, unfortunately dropping like flies. And, you can play that dime package, the lightning package, so you can, have a lot of defensive backs out there. And you're still as deep as you were last year at defensive back. It's just inexperienced depth as opposed to last year. Antoine Davis, Jason Hall, Deshaun Elliott, Houghton Hill is experienced depth. Now you got that 2018 class coming in. They're talented, but they're very inexperienced. And DeMarvion Overshown and Caden Stearns were getting some love, but now that's not really the case. So I think that dime package, once again, it becomes a priority, but this time you got to get those young guys reps. And your D-line, thank God you're deep with Chris Nelson and Brecken Hager and Charles Amenahu. Thank God you're deep now on that D-line. Even now Taquan Graham's getting a lot of love, and Gerald Wilbon's getting a lot of love, too, from what I'm hearing. So that's the concern, the linebackers, but the defense looks good. The only concern they got right now is depth at linebacker. Real quick, offensive line, Calvin Anderson taking snaps with the first team at left tackle. That's good. Denzel Okafor is now playing left tackle and right tackle, getting snaps at both, which is really good. Derek Kerstetter and Elijah Rodriguez, both these guys potentially can play tackle, guard, and center. We've seen them work at all of those different positions in the offseason. They're manufacturing depth. They only got six guys right now they trust. Denzel Okafor as a switch tackle, Calvin Anderson as a left tackle, Vahe at guard, Elijah Rodriguez at guard, Shackelford at center, Kerstetter at right tackle, or you can move him around the guard or center as well. Those are the six guys they trust. They need about two or three more. So Tope Amade is playing guard. Hudson, Samuel Cosme, who they really like. They got to figure out who they trust within that group. But I love the fact that Herb Hand is cross-training all basically like three or four guys. Okafor, Kerstetter, and Rodriguez. All those guys can play different positions. Six guys almost plays out like eight guys. Okay, and a running back, Keontae Ingram, He's working with the first team. He's getting snaps with the first team already, the freshman. You need to upgrade that talent at running back. They did that with Trey Watson, who they're still bringing along slowly through rehab. Daniel Young was the best of the pack, but no sign of really Kyle Porter or Tenille Carter getting valuable reps. Right now, Keontae Ingram's taking those reps as a freshman. I think that's an upgrade they needed to make. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up, put it together. We've got some crosstalk, all that more right here on the broadcast. This is the Horn 104.9 and AM 1260. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Here's the latest in the Urban Meyer scandal that I told you about. So the wide receivers coach Zach Smith, who was fired last month after a history of domestic violence allegations, became public. Now a new arrest has became public. He was arrested in 2013, reportedly, for operating a vehicle while intoxicated. That charge was later reduced. And it was reduced to a lesser charge. So there's a history, not domestic abuse. That's, you know, the driving while intoxicated, different issue. But Chad, who's joining us right now for Crosstalk, I'll ask you, does that now put the 2015 incident, which he acknowledges that he knew about and told the, put up the, you know, the proper channels, or put through the proper channels, I should say, and the 2009 incident, which they already talked about, that they acknowledged that now they were giving him a second chance after that, is all that now put in a larger perspective as to how much of this did Urban Meyer know about, and how much was he willing to decide to look away from and actually ignore?
Yeah, I don't know that this one. I don't know that it adds too much. It's all about the you know, what the Board of Trustees and how important they feel like this information is. Do they care about it? Did they not know about it? Do they think it's a big deal? You can also argue that it's obviously a separate issue from domestic violence.
Yes.
And Urban Meyer has not commented on his knowledge of the full legal history of Zach Smith. He's commented on his knowledge of
2009
Zach Smith and domestic violence.
Yeah.
So it could be seen as something different. And again, we've all had, I mean, everybody listening, not everybody, a lot of people listening right now, you know somebody that's had a DWI.
Yes.
You know somebody that's been involved in that. It does not make them an evil human being.
A bad person.
It does not mean they are headed down the road to degradation and it's all over and they should be, you know, put in some, you know, they should be put in therapy immediately or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, from Urban Meyer's perspective, it could just be, look, I knew the guy had a DWI, but it was pled down, and you know, I knew his marriage wasn't perfect, but I had no idea it was a serial, you know, serial beatings, if you will.
Well, Urban Meyer's, I think one of his stances is that I was giving this guy a second chance. People would say, does that fall under the second chance of 2013?
That once the DWI was
there,
right.
A pattern of reckless behavior.
Right.
And then the 2015 incident on top of knowing about all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
were you
true.
Covering up for this guy just because you wanted him on your staff?
To be fair.
He's a bad guy.
Right. To be fair, Zach Smith said, Urban Meyer says to him, if you hit her, you're fired. He didn't say, if you hit her or blank, 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 you're fired.
No, it's just murky. So, he'll be suspended for like 4 or 5 games. That's about it. No, really, it's just it's the way it comes down to. There's only so much you can do with
back
so
in time for
proof.
Michigan, is that what you're saying?
That makes a lot of sense right there. All right, Chad and Kevin coming up next. I want to thank Wags. Remember, the revolution should not be televised. We'll talk about it right here on the Rodcast. Everybody have a great night. Love you. Peace.
Hope you're ready for the next episode. Hey.